Thank you, Brother Ron, for those well-chosen words. I guess we could go ahead and pass out, or are they already passed out? Yeah, just pass those out. How many of you know how Pilgrim works as far as making new standards? Who don't know? Okay. Let's talk about it a little bit. Pilgrim is in the middle of a decree review right now in the conference, and we work at it. It's fall and spring and fall conference. We are trying to get it right. We're trying to have it worded in such a way that people can understand our decrees. We all know that we're not like the Bible writers that could write something for all of time and all of eternity, and it's forever settled in heaven. Our attempts to write a standard, write a decree is what we call it, is time and era sensitive. Like some of the writings we see in our decrees was 1960s model, and we're trying to bring this up to 2021 so we can be together. That's just a general statement, so it makes sense, and for this day and age in which we live. As I said, we are in the middle of a decree revision in our conference, and the way we do that is we, as a ministry, get together and write a standard. Mostly revise our standard, and then we vote on it. Like last fall, we voted on this standard that you have in your hand by now. We voted on this, and it passed by 75% majority of the ministry. So we approved this as a ministry. Then during the intervening next 6 months, we go around in meetings like this, and we find out what you think about this standard. Is it saying the right thing? Do we have the grammar right? Do we have even the principles or even the applications right? Are the principles making sense? The principles of God's word making sense? Then in the spring, we will go back and we will vote on this as a ministry. However, we operate much the same as our United States government in the fact that the senators and representatives go back to their clientele and to their districts and find out what everybody thinks, and then they go vote again. So that's what we're doing today. We want your input. We want you to say, I would say that there's no question that is off limits about this tonight. Just say, informally tell us if it doesn't make sense. So Ron and myself and Nelson can go back next spring and say, yeah, no way, we don't want that. But we want you to feel at home tonight in making this part of you, part of our church brotherhood. So there are many congregations that have what they call congregational type government. where the members all sit together and they come up with a standard. This is the method that we use, is we go out and we ask, after the ministry makes a decision, then we go ask the people. And so we've been going around in every church, finding out the pulse of the people in regards to a number of these details. So, any questions about how a standard is formed? We go back and we get a 75% vote on this proposed decree revision this spring. It will become the decree. It's no longer up for grabs, but it will become the decree. Now, you're holding two documents in your hand. One is about dress. The other is about music. The music one is one step behind the dress one. It is just purely the brethren were together and met on and voted on the music one, but it's only to bring it to the first step, the first vote of the ministry, official vote that amounts to anything will be next spring. Then it will go back to the next fall, and so we have till next fall really to do comment on this, but this document about music is a step behind the other document. So, are there any questions about how this process works? I would be glad to help answer, or I will find the answer. Nelson or Ron or Delbert, do you have any questions? Any of the rest of you? We come from varied backgrounds. I would say that the ones that are from Eastern background are probably a little more familiar with this, but like Andy and I came from fellowship, so we're used to congregational government a little bit. So it's just a little bit of a shift. I don't think it's major shift, but it is a shift. Any questions? Well, we'll take the one that says proposed decree revisions, fall conference, September 16, 17, 2020. We'll start with this one. And it says Christian dress. Number 4 is at the top. So if you would have your standard book, your decree book, you would see that this document that we're looking at tonight would replace exactly number 4. It says Christian attire in our decrees. So this is a rewriting, so it's a little bit different, but it follows much the same thoughts. So number 4, under Christian dress, it quotes from Luke 8:35. It said, "Then they found a man, out of whom the devils were departed, sitting at the feet of Jesus, clothed and in his right mind." You will notice in your old decree book that very same verse is on the top, is right underneath number 4. However, then it changes. So I believe to look at this rightly, we need to have some scripture. Marlon Nolt, would you read 1 Timothy 2, 9 and 10? Delbert, would you read 1 Peter 1, 14? Brother Joe Whitmer, would you read 1 Peter 3, 3 and 4? And Brother Tim, you read 1 Peter 5, 5. I believe that's where we'll stop reading scriptures for this evening. 1 Timothy 2, 9 and 10. Okay, 1 Peter 1:14. First Peter 3:3-4. First Peter 5:5. I guess I would like to say that the New Testament gives us principles to live by, and those of us who want to follow Jesus, want to follow Him, why we want to do these things in principle, at least. However, we are a brotherhood, and there are many ways we could do things. For instance, there is no scripture that says you must wear the cape dress. There's a whole multitude of ways you could make a modest dress without the cape. But we follow that practice. It's almost Mennonites wear the cape dress, okay? It's just the way we do things. That's how we attempt to meet the modesty principle. So the New Testament is written in principle form, and we as groups, various groups, come up with applications to meet that principle. But the Bible does give us the command to adorn ourselves in modest apparel. It can be expected that practical choices of Christian dress will be modest. Scriptural modesty has at least two applications. The body will not be shamefully exposed, but rather covered. And B, the clothing itself will neither be bold, showy, loud in colors or patterns, nor abbreviated or tight. Modest apparel complements humility and countenance, reverential fear toward God, and soundness of mind. Modest apparel is a testimony of a disciplined and humble heart in order to practice scriptural modesty. We call for the following applications in our practice. Now, here we go. This is where the practice, it's not just principle anymore, it's where we agree as a brotherhood. And this is your time to either object or to say, okay, I'm okay with that. But I invite your commentary on this. We have an auctioneer in Ohio that when he opens the sale, he says, go ahead and shoot at me. So I'm asking you for that, for comments tonight about whatever you might think. And so we're working in this to get it right. We're not trying to stuff it down your throat, but we're trying to get it right. And I just hope you, as a family, church family, will take this opportunity to help the church leaders out in getting it right. We're going to pick on the brethren first, on their shirts. Because of the immodesty of tight or form-fitting wear, we ask our brethren to refrain from wearing pullover or t-shirts. Bright colors or feminine colors, such as pink or lavender, shall be avoided. Also, except for work, uniforms, shirts shall not advertise brands, themes, and other statements in writing or pictures. Dress shirts shall be long-sleeved and appear to be solid, modest color. Casual shirts shall avoid bold patterns or bright colors. Okay, what are your questions here? about this standard. Something different than we have been practicing, or is it okay?
What are your questions? Marlon.
What's that?
It does.
It's qualified here. It says they shall appear to be of solid, modest color. Shall appear. So we're in the writing stage here. If you don't like it, tell us. I'm not sure we'll change it, but we need to know. Pink or lavender shirts, they're off limits. They shall be avoided. Also, except for work, uniforms, shirts shall not advertise brands, themes, and other statements in writing or pictures. Aeropostale, off limits. Adidas, off limits. Even a big Cabela's logo, off limits. That's what this says. It is a change, a small change, for what Marlon just suggested about casual wear or Wednesday night wear. So, oftentimes the shirts are judged by the 30-foot rule. If somebody is standing 30 feet away and they appear to be solid color, it's okay. Can have a little design, print, stripe, whatever. Any questions about this? I am really asking you to comment on this. If maybe as we go on, if you think about something that is back we covered before, why we'll go back there. Moving on to pants. In order to avoid the immodesty of our culture, pants shall be full cut rather than tight fit and be of full length. Also, we call our brothers to choose formal rather than casual look. The casual or intentionally streaked, extremely baggy pants, faded or torn choices available in society, violate the principle simplicity of the modesty principle. The traditional look of lighter shirt and darker trousers is to be honored in all choices. What we're saying here is that these new tight jeans that fit right tight to the leg and have a low-cut waist, that's off limits. That's what that's saying. Now, I'm sounding a little bit like we're really legalistic or whatever, but I'm not really that way. In fact, I don't like meetings like this. But there's a lot of times that people really want to know what we mean. And so I'm going to say what we mean tonight. And if you don't like it, you know, you can talk to me. You can resist or whatever. The jeans intentionally streaked. We know that it's the in thing to have faded patches on jeans. That's what this means. And so forth. For instance, over the seat, it's often faded, or on the legs, it's faded. So that's what this means. The standard for our sisters, the standard application for dress is the basic cape dress. To honor the modesty principles, dresses shall be loose rather than form-fitting. Necklines shall cover rather than reveal. Sleeves shall easily come below the elbow. And hemlines shall reach to at least midway between the knee and the ankle. Probably one of the things that is the most contentious, and it's a contention for 50 years already, is how long sleeves are on the sisters. I remember 50 years ago, fairly easily now, and the bishops and preachers were talking about sleeve length being below the elbow, and we still are. So it's still here. It's still an issue. We want the sleeve ends to be below the elbow. Fabrics shall not be sheer, bold, contrasting colors, or large print. Our application for this is, the practical application for this is, we say that the cluster of flowers or the plaid can be 2 inches. So the flowers, we used to say the flowers could be so big, I believe it was a quarter, but more today we're going more for the cluster, the plaid, to be 2 inches or less. It shall not be bold or contrasting colors or large print. That's how we interpret that. Legwear shall be worn in public life. Legwear shall be subdued dark colors, black, brown, navy, charcoal, and so forth. For formal dress, legwear shall be black. Now there is a change. That's a change. The pilgrim standard previously, and what's in your book, would be written that legwear shall be black. This changes it to subdued dark colors. This is a change. I don't believe we'll go over the maternity dress. I think that is been in effect for quite a while. There is if you care to see it, I'm sure we can get a paper on that maternity dress. Members who choose to expose their bodies in an immodest manner, such as modern swimwear, are subject to censure. That comes right out of the old standard also. Any questions about what we went over so far? B, on the next page, Christian dress shall be without ornamentation. We read those scriptures. In the creation of the human body, the Lord placed a natural beauty. In the creation of new life in Christ, there are hidden beauties in the inner light. The Lord desires that the new life beauty is the prominent display of his people. Because of this truth, the scriptures denounce placing ornaments or decorations on the human body, in the hair or on the clothing, adorning the body with gold or any precious metals or pearls or any valuable gems is a direct violation of these commands. With this principle in mind, the wedding band or ring shall not be worn. Watches shall not be of gold appearance. Watch bands shall be black or of subdued dark color and shall not be trimmed with gold or silver. Ornamental pins and other extras shall be eliminated. While eyeglasses are a necessary tool for many people, our culture uses eyeglasses to complement and adorn. The eyeglasses we choose should be styles that are not given to body adornment. Neckties and bow ties in men's wear are also considered to be an ornamental extra and shall be avoided. So, we're talking about hairstyles and so forth. And I guess I'll just say where we want to be covering size-wise is our standards. It's written in another part of the standard, but it's behooves us to bring it up here, is we ask that the covering in the back be come to the front of the back of the ear, and in the front, the top, it comes to the top, front, over the top, it comes to the front of the ear. So that's our stated practice with the covering size. I say, many times I've said this, that the covering needs to be of sufficient size that a person looking at a woman's head sees the covering, not the hair style. That covering is the most prominent feature on a sister's head. So just keep that in mind as you make new coverings and try and make application to our brotherhood. You know, another thing I should say is that if you're a member here at Cornerstone, you came because you wanted to. We believe in voluntary church membership. That's an Anabaptist distinctive. It's been around for many years, since the days when they were forced to join the Catholic Church. The Anabaptists came up with this idea of voluntary church membership. You're not forced to be part of the Anabaptists. You are not forced to be part of this church either. There are plenty of places that you can go that will allow almost anything. But we as a brotherhood have agreed that we want voluntary support for these things, and we have an agreement in the brotherhood that we are going to have this as our standard. So just bear that in mind as we think about some of these things. It says in the one paragraph there that says the non-ornamental people, Lord, shall forsake ornamental extras on their clothing, such as lace, ruffles, smocking, contrasting fabrics in both colors and prints. Ornamental sleeve ends and collars. Fitted waists and tight skirts are all illustrations which can take away from the intended simplicity and modesty with the basic cape dress is intended, that the basic cape dress is intended to declare. Talking about sleeve ends, I say, and the bishops need to interpret some of this in their own framework or their own jurisdiction, you might say, but sleeve ends is, I am okay with them ending in different ways. Some churches require the elastic sleeve end. But I'm okay with them ending in different ways, but I feel that it's wrong, and according to this, it's wrong to ornament them with things that are just an ornament, things that make them, are just there for pretty, you might say, and when you're making sleeve ends, don't add ornaments. You can allow have them end in different ways, but don't make an ornament. Talks about fitted waists or tight skirts. As a conference, we prefer the elastic waist on sisters' dresses. However, there has always been some, and we make exception for, that some ladies like their dresses to, I'm not sure what kind of a waist they call it, but they don't have the elastic in the waist, but we ask them to wear a belt with those kind of waists. So if there is any questions about that, I'm more than happy to try and answer those questions also. The question that is very pertinent and very good for us to answer is found in the last paragraph in part B. Am I choosing these things to bring attention to God and His Word, or is this for my glory and pride? So that's a good question. C, Christian dress shall not be conformed to fads and fashions. The changing fads and fashions of today are controlled by the prince of the power of the air, the spirit which now works in the children of disobedience. A distinctive or prescribed standard for our dress can help us to avoid the changing fads and fashions so common to our culture. The clothing industry places a high emphasis on change. We desire to reap the blessings and stewardship, humility, and peace, which can be had by those who reject society and its peer pressures and its persistent changes in the clothing industry. A distinctive standard also can guard against the accumulation of many varieties of dress and shoe options, which changing fads bring into our wardrobe. Clothing designers use name brands and logos to appeal to a godless society. Adidas, Aeropostale. There is a worldly identity statement made when people choose to display fashion designer names, brands, and logos. A Christian will not choose to display popular and fashionable designer clothing names and logos on his body, the temple of the Holy Ghost. In order to promote distinctive dress and personal appearance, we ask our members to abide by the following. This is a change here, too. Shoes shall be worn for casual wear, shall be dark in color. So that's what we're asking for. Our shoes for casual wear. Previous to this, our standard with Pilgrim has been black. Dress shoes, however, shall be black, and sandals shall not be worn in public life. Now, probably one of the questions that came up often and during these meetings is this thing about sandals. Really, does it have to be that way? Well, this is your chance to say something about it if you want to. So that is a question that's been asked. Any questions about this? Define public life. Well, I'll define it as I see it. If you're walking along the shores of Lake Erie with your family, that's family life. Going to Walmart in sandals, I guess that would be public life. That's probably where I put it. I'm not sure that's even quite right, but I'm sure that's where it's being interpreted. Yeah. Marlon. Yeah, that's a good question. I they can be dark color now if they
life is full of, life is kind of topsy-turvy. A lady taking her children to school wearing Crocs in mid-May, and she says, "Oh, I need a box of cheer at Walmart." So what should she do? Should she go home, put her shoes on, or should she run in quick with her Crocs on? And that's kind of where it's at. Certainly, we don't want to wear Crocs to church or Wednesday evening even. Flip-flops, either one. Marlon? You would like to see that in it. Yeah. Well, yeah, you'd be okay with Crocs and socks, I think. You'd be, yeah, that'd be. Somebody else had their hand up over here, I thought. Was it Ron? Was it you? These are the kind of questions that need to be discussed.
What Marlon was talking about, I remember being discussed, and we got pointed back and said, well, back on the first page, the second to last paragraph, said, legwear.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's what Marlon concluded there. Yeah. For our brethren shall wear a plain suit, coat for worship and other formal functions. Headwear worn for weather protection shall be consistent with the principles of separation. Other clothing, footwear, and headdress shall not be of fashionable, sporty, or Western styles. So we ask that the plain suit be worn for worship. And we all know that, at least I don't even wear the plain suit in the summertime, from May till late September, October, I very seldom have a suit coat on, except for weddings and so forth. So what I tell, try and make it a practical application, if it is cold enough to wear additional clothes, the first thing that comes on is the plain suit, not a sport coat. Sport coats should not be worn in place of the plain suit to church, even when it's cold. I mean, if you want to wear a coat on top of the plain suit, that's great, that's good. But for worship services, we would like to see the plain suit worn going to worship. Men's hair shall be groomed generally with a natural hairline and regularly trimmed. Extreme and fashion styles such as military buzz cuts, long bangs or sideburns, and so forth shall be avoided. Our practice for sideburn length, probably one of the most contentious issues, is halfway, midway, down the ear. That's where we have always been. And that's where we still are, halfway, mid-ear. People understand that? Might be a little bit of variation in people, but I think if we stay there, we're in good shape. So even though it's a little bit different with different people. The shoes for our sisters shall not follow the unhealthful and sensual designs of the world, such as heels over 1 3/4 inches high, low-cut and exposed heels and toes. Now, the fashion industry and the Pilgrim Conference have two different ways they measure heels. The fashion industry measures the front of the heel on a lady's shoe. The Pilgrim Conference measures the back of the heel on a lady's shoe. And there is quite a difference. If you have an inch and a half in the front of the heel, it's a pretty high heel. So what we're saying is 1 3/4 inches at the back. I ran into that a couple years ago. Ladies were saying, oh, we can wear pretty high heels because 1 3/4 inches, you go to the shoe store and they say 1 3/4 inches. And then it probably gets to be about 2.5 in the back. Something like that. And we discovered this discrepancy. The choices we make concerning outer garments for cooler weather need to also follow the Bible biblical principles of nonconformity, separation, and modesty. Loud designs, brighter neon colors, and fashion label coats are not consistent with these principles. Fashionable headdress, ornamental scarves, and so forth shall not be worn. We ask that the scarves that are worn be inside your coat, not outside your coat, as just an added ornament. They have no functional value outside your coat at all. We ask that it be used for warmth. So just keep that in mind as you wear your scarves. Now, ornamental scarves and so forth, I guess we let it up to you to decide what that is. You know it when you see it. When you see an ornamental scarf, well, that's an ornament. But it's a little bit up to the individual to make your decision. Brother the other night said at a meeting I was at over at Lakeview, he said, well, why don't we just put in here, use common sense? And I said, well, that's okay. But common sense isn't very common sometimes. So that's the problem. Yeah. So I think dressing our children shall be according to the above mentioned Bible principles. I think we say something to our children when we dress them, and so I think that is where we need to be. Now, is there any questions about this document? I guess I would rather have some complaining or some here then after it's a decree. Anything that's misunderstood? Marlon. The children's dress? Okay. Yeah, I should have a good answer for you, and I don't. Maybe we could have common sense. Yeah. you know, you can see ornaments in little girls' hair and ornaments on their shoes, and that's what it means. Ornaments, socks, you know, that have the lace and so forth. That's exactly what it means. More questions. Does that have a design in it? It's right there. I can't see it from here. Yeah. Like I can see Aaron has a design in his shirt. I just don't want to put him on the spot, but I can see that. His shirt is very acceptable, far as I'm concerned. But, yeah. I will say this, you wouldn't believe how 75 ordained men, how long they wrangled to come up with this little document. I mean, it is a big deal. I mean, some people say this, and some people say that. And no, it should be this way. And no, it sound better. The grammar should be this. And you know, I mean, I write documents all the time, and I'm sure if it would be Joe Weaver writing it, it'd probably be stripped down more than this. But we got to work for the brotherhood, and yeah. Any other questions? That's a question that's been asked. I believe it was the intention of the writers of this that this be followed in all choices, just like it says. Work, casual, dress. I believe that's back. I know it was. Yeah. What's that? Yeah. Well, if a farmer wears a white shirt, it won't be white very long. I promise you that. Yeah, I think we just... To me, if I was... Okay, we all have personal preferences, okay? And if I have a personal preference, I'd change this some. And it would be much more streamlined. But I'm in a brotherhood, and I'm not going to go stomping out because it's... Yeah, because just I don't like. Yeah, but... You would say that as a danger? See that as a danger in the brotherhood? I will say that I might have sounded over the top in relation to some of these regulations, but I think it's very important that the congregations understand the ideals that we're trying to uphold. I don't see any of the bishops in Pilgrim being radical. I just don't see that. Now, of course... Radical is relative. It depends where you're coming from, but from a conservative Mennonite background, I don't see that. A conservative Eastern Nationwide Fellowship, Beachy, like many of our people are, I don't think it's really all that radical. We're that radical. Yeah, Willie, that's the same question I had two nights ago. Exactly. So it's a good question. Well, that is a good, you know, everybody wears Columbia coats or Izod or something or other, and I would say that that's probably pretty safe to do what you just said there, the 30-foot rule. Ron, do you have any questions?
I know what Willie is talking about is not identical to the world. We've talked. I think that where we're at is, if you apply the 30-foot rule, I think that's probably where a lot of us are at.
By the way, you have a plaid shirt on too, don't you? Yeah. And also,
one of the things that I personally have really appreciated about working at Pilgrim Conference is that I haven't felt dragged. I think a couple of these issues, there's some obvious room we have to shape up, and we know it.
Yeah.
A number of things that are no question. But I don't think we're looking at the spirit of this document is not to take off the Columbia tag off from its jacket. document isn't to make Marvin throw away his work jeans or make Philly pull out a faded pair and he pulls out a lighter flat. That's not the spirit. We know the spirit is that when we show up at volleyball games with a black shirt and white pants or just as close as you can get.
Or Wednesday evening, or accountability meetings, and
We can abuse that working of the conference to just go by the spirit of the law, not to the absolute letter. It can be abused, but I think we all can come pretty close to common sense.
I agree. The other document you have starts with how can I honor God with my music choices. Now this is really up for rewriting. It had went to a minister's meeting and was voted on there, but it's not in the process yet of ratification. It will go, if some document like this will go to our conference this spring and then be voted on, and then next fall we'll vote on it again, and after that it will become part of our decrees. I don't think I'm going to read this all, but I will commend it, or I will let you read it. I will say that probably it represents a change in relation to musical instruments. Typically, our standard has allowed for the organ and the piano and wind instruments. However, this allows, it says that we believe instrumental accompaniment may have a place in our private and family lives when used in discretion and played in a way that assists us in singing and making melody in your heart to the Lord. So rather than restricting it to the organ and the piano, it opens it up for guitars and other instruments. So I had somebody tell me that percussion instruments are not part of this package, but as I read this document, I see nothing like that. As long as it's consistent with singing, making melody in your heart to the Lord, I don't see any prohibition against those instruments either. Now, I will qualify that and say that I might be missing something, but it represents a change. So the guitars and the violins, the other stringed instruments are all will be included. I guess maybe I will read just part of this. Number four, we do not judge the motives of persons engaged in Christian music ministries, but since music has become such a professionalized and valued element in Christian entertainment, we recognize the possibility of music becoming an ecumenical mixer and its heroes. I'm not sure why they use some of this wording. I have a problem with the wording. It should be it's artists or something. Becoming role models, we should avoid the influence of musical groups who are weak in modesty, non-ornamentation of the body, and in other ways do not give it outward evidence of endeavoring to lead a separated godly life. 2 John 1, 10 and 11 encourages us not to invite into our house or bid Godspeed to those who are not adorning the teachings of Jesus. These cautions should guide us in our recorded music selections, viewing of music videos, and attending concerts or programs. to safeguard against the draw toward professionalism, attendance or ticketed or paid to enter musical events is forbidden. So, in essence, the way this is written, as I understand it, and I believe I'm right on this, that the recorded music selections or viewing of music videos needs to be Anabaptist Mennonites. Or somebody else just as conservative. That is indeed a change. Now, that's the way this is written tonight. So we need to think that through. If that's really where we want to go, well, it's going to represent a big change. Because who doesn't listen to groups that are non-Anabaptists? I mean, is that where we indeed want to go? That's just a question that I'm asking. Number 5 says, streaming music has made it increasingly important to maintain accountability in our music selections. That is so true. The smartphone has opened up a huge world of music. In fact, since we all have smartphones and access to the internet, the no radio television standard has become out of date. We might as well admit it, because it is. And we might as well just say so. I agree with the document that it's increasingly more important that we have accountability for our music, much like accountability for our communication devices themselves. I guess I feel that is where we must go. So, are there any questions about this?
Thank you.
Yeah, it's a change. This is a change from from our previous standard. This is a change. Yeah. Yeah, you know, it was a technicality, I guess. I'll freely admit that. You open the back of a piano and there's 1,000 strings there. There really is. So, what's that? Yeah. What's that? Any other questions or comments? Well, you take this home and digest it. What we talked about tonight, it's time to close. And we're going to close, but I want to say it again, that this is your time to have input into how we practice as a pilgrim conference and as individuals, even it affects us. So feel free to comment on this. With that, I think we'll just stand and have Delbert lead us into the dismissal, and then we'll ask for a verse of song afterwards, after we have the dismissal. Let's stand.
see Jesus, he'll sing and shout.
Dismissed. Thank you.